afternoon that I feel very close to my heart. I feel that this topic is so close to me that it is on my mind for an every day. The title of it is Harmony in the Family. Having harmony in the family. Harmony means that we're together, we agree, we have disagreements. And when I talk about the family, I include my immediate family, which lives in the Twin Cities, one in Milwaukee, my grandson. And I also talk about the church family, of course, always included in there. And I also, as you know from my past history of my speaking, that I always include the ones outside the church. Now, when I say outside the church, I don't mean that I've pushed them outside of the church in my mind. I don't mean that at all. I mean they're just not called. And I always include them in my sermons because I get around them often and I see them and I see their reaction to this topic of harmony in the church. You know, it's a big subject. I've narrowed it down, but I want to start out in Colossians 3 in verse 12 through 21, and this is a set of scriptures we use talking about the relationships and families and having a harmonious relationship in a family. And in Colossians chapter 3, starting in verse 12, Colossians chapter 3, verse 12 through 21, because the Bible does have a lot to say about harmony in the family. In verse 12, it says, "Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercy." So he's explaining this, how this harmony works: kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another, forgiving with one another. These are big topics for any family to come up against in the soul. "If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so you also must do. But of all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection." That love is unconditional love. So the above sentences can be put in there to show us what makes a harmony in a family. But it's all based on our unconditional love for our family. And that we do not want to forget. We just do not want to forget his unconditional love. Verse 18, "Wives," he goes to the wives, "submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter toward them. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well pleasing to the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke your children to lest they become discouraged." So all of these, God explains that put harmony into our families. And no matter who we are, we all have a family somewhere. This topic is really close to my heart because it is at the top of my list concerning my everyday affairs in this world that I live in. And staying in harmony with my family. I was over at my brother's house yesterday. Staying in harmony with him. I don't always agree with him. I don't always disagree with him. Well, he probably wouldn't take it. He probably let me have one. But the Bible does teach us that that's our job. We are responsible, as it says here, he covered the wives, the husband, and the children, to do those things that I just read, or we read together in Colossians chapter 3. It's a responsibility of a Christian to do this in order to have a strong family unit. But better than that, better word than that, is harmony in the family. Harmony means that we're together, that we overlook, and I'll go into some of that a little later, the parts of the family that we may not agree with. Christianity will prove itself at home in our relationship with those closest to us. Closest to us. Therefore, is harmony when family members put the others' interests above their own. They put their interests above their own and then submit to one another. So it does take a lot of work. And I've found that out, and I'm sure you have too. But give it a lot of thought in the days ahead, because it is something that we have to work on continually. I know I do. Every one of us. I ask for a show of hands that you have some disagreement or something with a family member that's going to throw the harmony of that family off. That's what I'm getting at. We don't want to do that. We want to be on top of the game and go out of our way as Christians in God's church to make sure that we do our part to create harmony in the family, that togetherness. It's not a light subject. It sure isn't to me, I'll guarantee you that. I have to hold myself down. Not only that, but my wife told me to hold it down, so I have to hold it down, but it is very close to me. But I want to use the example of Christ in this first part here, and never in having harmony in the family. And I want to give you 3 points how to create harmony. And using Christ as the first one, here it is. Here's the first point. Never give up on our family members that are not called. Never give up on our family members that are not called. Just don't do that, because it is not creating harmony in a family. Now, if anybody had a family that was unique, it was Christ. I don't know if you studied into that or looked at it lately, but his family was very unique. Very unique. But he had members that were outside the church. Maybe you don't think that's right, but that's what I read in the Bible. He had brothers and sisters, and we'll read that, that were not called during his ministry. In John chapter 7. I'll show you that here in these few scriptures that I have here. Never give up on your family members. No matter what they do or what they say, do not give up on your family members. If we do, we're not showing our Christianity. We're not showing our Christianity. In John 7, verse 5 through 9, here's Christ's example. For even his brothers did not believe him. They did not believe him. Then Jesus said to them, "My time has not come, and your time is always ready. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me, because I testify that its works are evil. You go up to this feast. I am not yet going up to the feast, for my time has not yet fully come." When he had said these things to them, he remained in Galilee. So he said then these things to these people who were standing there, and he says his brothers did not believe him. He had 4 brothers. I think that's the correct number. How many sisters? It doesn't say. They were not converted. It doesn't say that in the Bible. None of his brothers were converted. Now, we can go on to mention James and Jude, who became pillars in the church. James, who was a pastor in Jerusalem, and Jude, who wrote the book of Jude, which I just read this morning. But even Jude, he knew what to do when he said, "My name is Judas. I am the brother of James. I am the brother of James." He didn't say, "Well, I'm the brother of Jesus Christ." He didn't say that. So somewhere along the line, two of these brothers were converted. But it doesn't say in the Bible that Christ pushed them away or talked down to them or said they weren't worth going to visit or whatever. It doesn't get into detail. We have to use our imagination when it comes to that part of it. Now, we can only imagine, I put in my notes, the degree of Jesus' pain at his rejection by those he loved. His rejection by those he loved. The degree of pain that he felt. We feel that. We feel that as Christians in God's church. Matthew 13, verse 54 through 58. Matthew 13, verse 54 through 38. 54 through 50, sorry. Matthew 13, verse 54. When he had come to his own country, he taught them in their synagogue, so that they were astonished and said, Where does this man get this wisdom and these mighty works? Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary? And his brothers, James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas? And his sisters, are they not all with us? Where then did this man get all these things? So they were offended at him. Brethren, how offended were his brothers and sisters against this Savior of all, the Redeemer, if you want to call him that? How offended were they? It doesn't say. It says that they were offended. They were standing there, the sisters and the brothers and many other people probably. They were all standing there and they were offended. We get offended at our relatives. We don't like what they say. And shame on us, because we should overlook what they say and bring harmony into a family, no matter what it is. No matter what it is. Just for the sake of the name of the family, whether it's Erickson or whoever it is, just for the sake of the name of the family, we should say, yes, we were offended. I was offended. I was offended at my brother the other day. I'm not ashamed to admit that. And yes, I told him I have to get going. Yes, I left. But I didn't turn around and blast away at him. Of course, he's a year and a half older than I am. He always did. He always was able to kind of take care of me, so I had to watch my P's and Q's. He's a Swede through and through, and he's a big one. So getting back to being offended, we go through the same pain, disappointment over unconverted family members, and I don't care which one of us it is sitting here or me standing here, we get offended. We face the same disappointment that Christ faced when his brothers and his sisters stood there and were offended at him. I'm just reading what the Bible says. You can say, well, that may or may not be the case, but that's what it says. I'm reading you the Bible. Don't believe me, believe the Bible. That's what Mr. Armstrong used to say. No other family, I put in my notes, has come to terms with their close relative turning out to be the Redeemer of mankind. No other family has had this occasion, this happened to them, and something they had to come to terms, Christ said to come to terms with. Because there was his family that was not converted, and he said they were offended at him. But no other family had that happen to them. John chapter 19, keeping in mind here, never give up on your family members. You're going through what Christ went through with his family, and you're going to see why. John chapter 19, verse 25 through 27. Now there stood at the cross, this was at the crucifixion of Jesus, his mother and his mother's sister Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing by, he said to his mother, "Woman, behold your son." He was not Christ's son. He was a disciple of Christ. But he wanted to emphasize that with her so she knew that he was serious about what he said. Then he said to the disciple, "Behold your mother." And from that hour, that disciple took her as his own, her to his own home. I put in my notes here, and I don't even have to read them. If you or I were hanging on a cross, and we looked down, and the members of that family that you would expect to be there were not there. They were not there. It doesn't say they were there. Now, you can say, well, they could have been. Why, sure, but it doesn't say that. He looked down, and there was the one individual that he could say, "This is your son." Where were the rest of them? Where were the rest of them when they found out that he was going to be crucified or was crucified? What else do I have in my notes? She had four other sons, Mary did. Yet apparently none were present to comfort her. Think about that. Let's think about that. She had four other sons, and not one of them was there to comfort her. That's what I read in my Bible. Now, when we talk about not giving up on our relatives and our mates, and ones that are not called as yet, we can use this slide right in there as an example, above all examples in the Bible, that we can say, well, where were they? Where was the brothers of his that he was supposed to? Evidently, there were none were disciples. Speculation? No. They weren't there. They were not there in that group of people. And yet Christ looked down and he was on the cross and he said, there's my mother down there weeping and crying, as any mother in here would be doing. And all of a sudden, there was nobody else there but his married sister and the other people who were standing there. So that's what we should keep in mind. I put here what mixed feelings Jesus must have had when he declared to his mother, woman, behold your son. Behold your son. If the others would have been there, he would have said, mother, there's your family. There they are, 1, 2, 3, 4. Doesn't say that. He says to John, behold your son. What else do I have here? A person who deeply loves his or her unbelieving spouse or relative suffers as Jesus suffered over his faithless brothers. Over his faithless brothers. Everyone who loves a mate, who's not called into the church, or a relative, goes through the same pain and disappointment. I do with my family. I am very protective of my family. Sometimes they don't deserve it. But I will not go as far as to say that I'm going to condemn them or get after them or do whatever. I can disagree with what they're doing, but that doesn't mean I break up the harmony in the family. We have family members that I don't disagree with, that I don't think they're doing right, but I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to break up this family for any reason, unless it was blatant disrespect of a mother or father. I will not do it. I refuse to do it. I refuse to do it. We must never lose sight of the worth of every man, every human being in God's sight, no matter who they are. Above all, we must never give up on them. And I want to stress that. We must never give up on them. The ones that we are not in tune with spiritually. Because I want you to look at Acts chapter 1 in this last scripture in this set here. Acts chapter 1 and verse 14. What happened? Along the lines, somewhere along, the brothers were converted, because it says in Acts chapter 1 and verse 14, Acts chapter 1 and verse 14, they're talking about when the 120 were in this one room to pray. These all continued with one accord in prayer and supplication with the women and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and with his brothers. They were there. They were converted, evidently, somewhere along the line. And that's what we have to remember, that somewhere along the line, my brother or my sister or whoever it is, your brother, your sister, are going to be converted. And that's what we always have to keep in mind. Never, never give up on someone who is not called, or, as we say, converted. Or is, if we do, we're missing the whole point. We're missing the whole point of what life is all about. There is nothing more that Satan wants to destroy quicker than the family that we have within our midst. And our Christianity is going to show, as I said in my introduction, it's going to show to people what we do in our home, how we react to our family members. Is there harmony there? Is there togetherness? Is there love there? It's going to show. So it is that important. Okay, I put here Mary's name not mentioned again in the scriptures. nor his sisters. His sisters' names are never mentioned. I don't know why. I'll have to ask Christ about it someday. But so that's point number one. Remember that, Brenda. Please remember that. We want harmony in the family. And when you leave here and you go home and you have a family member, I'm rattling on here. I'll get off on it here in a minute. But you go home and you have a family member that is in that condition and you feel that they're not up to your standards, please never, never give up on them. That's point one. Number two. Here's number two point and second point in having harmony in the family. Now, these next two points might seem very mundane and kind of easy, but they are not easy because I was even reading up to this morning on this one subject. Realize the futility of arguments. So this goes right along. That's point number two. Realize the futility, and I stress futility, of arguments. Arguments can mean disagreements. Disagreements. It can mean disruptions. It can mean disunity within a family. So that word is a big word, arguments or disagreement. And I'll read a little later on in my notes that if we can't settle a disagreement, there's basically something wrong. There's basically something wrong with us. When I talk about arguments, the futility of arguments, especially a man and wife, if that disagreement can't be solved and settled, then there's something basically underneath that's wrong. But realize the futility of arguments. And Proverbs 18 will be in the book of Proverbs now. Proverbs 18, verse 19 through 21. The Bible has a lot to say about arguments, disagreements, the tongue, the offensiveness of the tongue. Verse 19 of Proverbs 18. A brother offended is harder to win than a strong city, and companions are like the bars of a castle. A man's stomach shall be satisfied with the fruit of his mouth. From the fruit of his lips shall he be filled. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. I put in my notes here, it's not what we say, but how we say it. Life and death is in the power of the tongue. There's a whole chapter in the book of James, in James 3, talking about the tongue. Life and death are in the tongue, and those who love it will eat of it, of its fruit. It's how we say it, brethren. It's how we talk to one another. It's how we react to one another's answer or to a question. I'm getting down the nitty-gritty of it now, because even after all these years I've been married, it happened to me a couple of days ago. Not big, big problem, big disagreement. She come to church with me today, so it couldn't have been that big. But it gets down to the point where we ask a question, and we want an answer, but the answer doesn't come. But if it does come, it's been... person's been pushed at and turn around and then react, overreact. And there's a disagreement. There's a disagreement in a family. Disagreement brings disharmony. Life and death are in the power of the tongue. So when we answer, when we talk to one another, talk civilly. Civility. Is that the right word? Civility to one another. Don't just blow them off and just say, "Oh, that doesn't mean anything. What are you asking me that question for?" You're just asking for an argument. Believe me, you're just asking for it. Now, this point is covered in the book of Proverbs, in Proverbs 17 and verse 14. Proverbs 17 and verse 14. The beginning of strife is like releasing water. I love that. Like releasing water. That's the beginning of strife. Family arguments begin with a disagreement. I mentioned this earlier. There is something fundamentally wrong when people cannot settle a disagreement or a dispute, which leads to an argument which you cannot win. cannot win an argument. I read somewhere, I don't know where I read it, 9 out of 10 arguments end with each thinking they are right. The approach based on the in the Bible must be followed. And I'll jump out of the book of Proverbs here, but it's like the beginning of strife. Somebody has to release that water. It has to come out of the mouth. Somebody had to say something. And all of a sudden there's an argument, there's a disagreement. And we may not agree with that person's whatever they said, but out it comes, and it's like water. It just comes out. We're talking about harmony in a household, or in a home, or in a family. It doesn't matter if it's our wives or children, especially children. I have to say, especially children, of course, along with the wives and the husbands. But the children, I am especially careful. I'm especially careful. Number one reason is they're getting older now. So we have to watch. Ask Corey. He's 51 now. So we have to watch continually. If I say this to them, is that they're going to take it this way? I'm not just talking. If I say that to him or my other son or my daughter, I'm always in the back of my mind, how are they going to take that? Is it going to create an argument? Is it going to create a disagreement? Is it going to cause some other problem down the line, 6 months? We always have to be aware of this, brother. This is a critical subject, and I could add 6, 7 points, but I narrowed it down to 3. It's a critical topic, because we must get along in our families. And if you think, and anybody thinks that doesn't have a family yet, that is easy. It is not easy. It is not easy to get along in our families. One word can change the whole scope of that family harmony and that relationship. One word can change it. That's how careful we have to be. What did I have here? James 3, I want to jump out of the book of Proverbs and go back to James 3, and this is what basically what we should base our approach to in the subject of watching out and seeing the futility of arguments. In James 3 and verse 17 through 18, if we base it on this, I don't think we'll have the problems we would have had otherwise. James 3 and verse 17 and 18, the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. I put in my notes here, peace is just not an absence of conflict. It is a state of mind. It is a state of mind, brethren. We want peace. We want peace. We want harmony in our families. We want harmony so that when we get together, there is no ill will. That we can get together and put our arms around each other and say, this one is not called, but still I love him or her. That shouldn't be too hard to do for us. It really shouldn't. Our Christianity tells us that we're to do that. Peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy. Full of mercy for the other individual. Remember my introduction that says that they have the other person's best interests at heart? That's what we should have. That's what we should do. You know that? We should have the interests of the other person at heart all the time, no matter who we would run across. Even up to yesterday, it's just in the back of my mind. I had to say that over and over to myself. Settle down, just settle down. Don't get carried away. Sometimes we get on a roll where we think we got the answers to everything. Everything we know and about the Bible and tells us here, you're willing to yield. I do that. You know, full of mercy, I do that. We don't do that. That's why we have family disharmony. And if you're talking about disharmony, I know what disharmony in a family is, because I grew up in one. It's terrible. unthinkable that people should have to go through that in their life. So harmony is a key issue in my sermon. Futility of arguments is part of it. Proverbs 19, verse 11 and 12 says this, along with the subject of realizing the futility in arguments. And if there is, here are some of the things that we can do. The discretion, in verse 11, of a man makes him slow to anger, and his glory is to overlook a transgression. So a man who wants to stop and not cause a problem in an argument, he's going to sit back and he's going to say, well, wait a minute, now I can't say it that way. If I get all over him and I get all over her, no matter who it is, if I say it that way, I'm not going to get anywhere. But if I just back off and say, I'm slow to anger, that's hard for a person to do. Try it. Get mad at somebody and just say, oh, well, you know, unless you want to walk away and the guy gives you one in the back of the head or something, but you want to just say, get mad, and just say, oh, I'm not mad anymore. Oh, no, it doesn't work that way. Slow to anger. Slow it down to anger. Anger. Then you better can overlook the problem and the transgression, as he said here. I put in my notes here, a sympathetic desire to listen and hear the other person out. Good way, sympathetic ear to listen to. That's such a big one. Just sit back and just say, what was it she or he said? Now that he's getting really downright close to home with me, or such as that. You've had that happen to you. I know you have. I mean, look at your faces. Your faces tell me you've had it happen to you. You said they go so far, and then they just say, well, I better just listen and then back off a little bit and hear the person out. Maybe I took him wrong. And I especially have to do that with this relative of mine who is my brother. I'm not picking on him. He's my brother. I was in business with him for many years, and I get along good with him. I still do. If he could give this stand up here, he'd give a lot worse things than I've been giving here. Simply a desire to listen and to back off and hear the person's point of view. What is he trying to say? Did he say it right? Did he say it wrong? I keep going on here. You can see it's not a small subject when it comes down to having arguments or disagreements within a family. It's not something small. It's huge. It's huge when I say, point number two, realize the futility of arguments. What's that all about? That's easy to understand. It's futile. Well, dig deep inside of it and see what's in there. Find out different. Proverbs 15, verse 1. Proverbs 15 and verse 1 and verse 18. Proverbs 15 and verse 1 says, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Read that again. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Harsh word. Something comes out of the mouth, and it's harsh, and it's downright dirty, and dirty pool, we used to call it. That's dirty pool to talk that way to me. And it's harsh, and it comes back. What's the other person going to do? He's going to come back harsh. So he's saying here, soft answer. Pretty simple. Pretty simple, a soft answer. Some anger is used to cover a person's... Where did I get that? Inability to control the situation. A hot-tempered person. And I thought about myself when I read that this morning. I was kind of going over my notes. Is used to hide, to cover another person's inability to control the situation. I have, over the years, not quite getting my point across, and all of a sudden, my hands come out, and my voice goes up, and I don't mean to, but it just gets getting higher and higher, and then all of a sudden I can look at my wife and I can say, time out, pal, you better back off, or you're going to be in big trouble. So, hot-tempered, inability to control the situation. I've done that. I've done that many times. I'm not getting my way. Especially a man, he wants to know, I'm not getting my way. What am I going to say? I got to get my way. I'm in charge here. I'm wearing the pants. But I got news for you. You're going to get married. It's not the case. You aren't going to wear the pants. You're not going to wear the pants. You can try. You can try, but you're not going to. Be aware when the voice is raised or when insults are added, it's time to stop. Plain and simple. Disagreements, futility of arguments. That's the second point. Third one is this. Oh, this is a good one. Third one is this. Show respect for the other person's point of view. I'm talking within the family. Show respect for the other person's point of view. Now, we might think otherwise. No, I've been to college. I got this high-powered job. I don't respect what they're going to say to me. I'm talking within the family unit now, and I've done this with my family, where I to this day go to Corey and ask him what he thinks about this, or my other son, ask him, what do you think about this, or my wife, even this morning, what do you think about this? Show respect for the other person's point of view. It brings harmony into the family, because that's the point of the sermon, harmony in the family. We show respect. Proverbs 18 in verse 2. Well, we might go in a different direction when we think about this subject. Proverbs 18 in verse 2. Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 2. Showing respect for the other person's point of view. Verse 2 says, a fool has no delight in understanding, but in expressing his own heart. He has no delight in understanding. You know what I take that to mean? The guy doesn't want to learn anything. Because if I can't learn anything from my son, or my other son, or my daughter, or my wife, then I'm in trouble. Or one of my grandkids, or well, my great-grandchildren aren't up there that old yet. But if I can't learn something from them, I'm in big trouble. I love talking to them. I love asking them questions. You should too. Ask them questions. What do you think about this? The young people, don't be afraid to ask them questions that you may have on your mind. You may even say, what does this tie look like? You know, or something small as that. But you get their opinion. I guarantee you, my family, they'll tell me if I ask them. They'll tell me if I ask them a question. What do you think about this? Do you think this is okay? Oh, no. No, Dad, you're in the wrong direction there. Be open about it. Let them answer you. Let them tell you what they think. And above all, as he says here, don't have no delight in understanding. That approach is going to get nowhere. We don't learn anything about family unity or harmony in the family if we don't listen and try to understand that person. We don't learn a thing. We have all this wealth of knowledge within our whole family. I have two sons and a daughter and my grandkids. All this knowledge and wealth. My grandson, he come home here. He's the only family member who lives out of the city. He come to my house, our house here, and he comes and stays with us when he's in the city. We're very close to him. Very close to him. He went down and took a shower. He come upstairs and he said, hey, Grandpa, that shower head really sucks. He says, that thing is small. And what it is, it corroded over the years. And so I was down there taking a shower, and it dribbling out of there, you know, a little spray on me. Shut the water off, went down to Home Depot, and I got one of these big ones. And I went home, and I put it on there. And to this day, I take couple of showers a day. I love that thing. But he had to say that to me. But I could have said, what are you coming in my house one time and you're going to tell me my shower is not working? What's the point? What's the point, Derek? You don't come up here and tell me my shower isn't any good. The thing was corroded. I took it off and you can barely blow through it. And the little stream coming out. No wonder I didn't want a shower. Shower with the YMCA. Of course, when I come to church, I got a shower somewhere, so it's either there or one of the lakes around there. But showing respect for his opinion. He said the shower is no good, Grandpa. So you can get those big ones. Boy, do I love it. No, I go in there, and that other one, you know, I used to turn the water on, and I'd stand there and wait. I'd wait. And I'm not kidding you. I'd go in the other room, do whatever I had to do in the laundry room, come back in, and it'd still be running. No hot water yet, you know. But when I got that new one, Derek told me to get that new one, I'm telling you, my skin is getting raw from taking so many showers. I'm not exaggerating. I'll come home from the Y and take a shower. I go out and mow my yard and take a shower. It's just like a kid with a new toy. That's the way it is. But in expressing his own heart, happiness in family lies in the ability to get others' point of view. And these things, see things from their angle, and I put all ages in parentheses. I don't care how young, if that child can speak, you can ask him a question and see what he or she sees it. You can do that. You can bend down and look at them and say, what do you think about my tie? Or what do you think about the suit I bought at Macy's? Or whatever it is. We can do that. I put here, first reaction. Here's some reactions we have when it comes to family. On the next page here, first reaction is this. I put a negative evaluation of the family member because of age. Beat it out of here. You're too young. You can't learn anything from you. That's big trouble when you do that. No, just don't do that. You just move on. I can't get anything from you. That's first reaction. Or make a judgment, a negative judgment, other than trying to understand. Here's another reaction. I have to prove them wrong. I have to prove this 10, 12, 15, 20, 50-year-old man that he's wrong. I'd never do that to him. He'd hang up on me if I did that to him. I don't try to prove him wrong if I disagree with him. I just say, okay, fine and dandy. See what I'm getting? It's a big subject, isn't it? I'm not just rattling on here, or maybe I am, but try not to. Prove them wrong. We don't want to do that. We don't want to do that at all. Or make a negative judgment, trying to understand it. Make a negative judgment. I don't agree with you. You said that, but this isn't right. I'm the adult here. I know what I'm talking about. Don't try to tell me what to do. So that was some of the things we can do to thwart that. I haven't noticed that, per se, in my family too much, but it does come up every once in a while. Proverbs 18 and verse 13. We're getting down to the end here. Proverbs 18, verse 13. For he who answered a matter, Proverbs 18 and verse 13, before he hears it, it is folly and a shame to him. That's the book of Proverbs saying that, not Don Erickson saying, you haven't heard my opinion on it. He answered a matter before he hears it. What did I put down here? He doesn't learn. I've already covered that. Just don't learn anything. You walk around in harmony in a family, and one person is going to walk around like a peacock and say, I know all there is to know about that subject. Don't tell me anything about it. And besides that, I don't want your opinion. Wrong outlook, wrong way to approach it. You don't learn anything. I learn from my family. Every day I learn. My wife, she had a little tidbit she gives me. I learn from what she has to tell me. I learn from her. Proverbs, I read the, once we learn others' opinions within the family are important, we will hear them up and we won't interrupt them. Once we learn that one fact, that we can hear them out and not interrupt, and to say, we know it all. At my age, I don't know it all. I pray every day that I can learn one more thing. And if that's from one of my family, that's fine with me. That's just fine with me. If I can learn one thing, it's one of my grandkids or my son or my daughter or my wife or whoever it is, learn one thing. Okay, Proverbs, here's the last one now. Proverbs 15 and verse 22. Proverbs 15 and verse 22. Keep in mind this point now. It's having respect for the other person's opinion. Proverbs 15 and verse 22. Without counsel, plans go awry, but in the multitude of counselors, they are established. They are established. Treat it like a multitude of counselors. When you go to your family and you say, hey, let's sit down here. We got this house. Should we do this to the house or should we not? Or should we spend the money or not spend the money? There's nothing wrong with asking family members that, unless they're a little bit too nosy or they got their nose in something they shouldn't have it in. But most generally speaking, families are not like that. So treat it as a counseling session amongst family members. Treat it that way. And you'll learn a lot from doing that, learning that. When we learn, we have to keep an open mind to learn from others. Here's a secret we learn when we do that. We learn to take advice and not just give advice. Keep that in mind. We learn to take advice. Take advice from your family members. Take advice. If the advice fits, use it. Why not? Why go to some Joe Blow out here and say, what do you think of this? As family counselor or whoever it is. Oh, that's a stretch. Family counselor. Go to anybody. Say, what do you think about this? Go to Home Depot and buy something and say, what do you think about this? No. I'll call my grandson more than once. My computer breaks down. What do you think about this? Well, I think you should get a new one. I haven't gone that far yet, so if I do, it's going to be an iPad. But we can do that, brethren. We have that ability. We all have families. Treat them as family. Treat them as human beings. Treat them as people that someday, if they're not in the church, they're going to be in the church. We have that, my wife and I. Treat them as if they're going to be in the church someday. And don't argue about the things, especially about religion. Don't argue. Don't cause strife and disharmony in a family by sitting around mulling over, well, we used to go to this church, but now we go to this one. We've had this split, and we're on down the line here. And boy, I'm just about fed up with it. Don't go down that road. We don't want to go down that road at all. Keep it on the up and up with your family. Keep it where they learn and you learn. Keep it so where they know you love them and they want to help you. They want to do the best for you. Keep it on a higher plane than just arguing or not listening to them or getting their input. Do that, and you'll have a lot more harmony in your family.